Near a brown dwarf star on the edge of the Kurnaak cluster, the New Republic astrographic probe Astrolabe dropped out of hyperspace. The broad, flat underside of the small, unarmed ship was heavily studded with scanners. Four scan platforms carried everything from stereo imagers and neutron dippers to quark detectors and wideband photometricons. The combination of the thin, wide profile and the scanner configuration had given the Astrogator-class probes the nickname of Flatfish. Your tour operators, the Astrographic Survey Institute, welcome you to Dornick 1142, the pilot called back to his survey team. Make sure you take time to look out the viewports. It was an old joke and drew no more than ritual chuckles from the survey team. ASI vessels were the restless, peripatetic travelers of the stars. The crew's job was to map and survey a star system, not to tour any place personally. The pilot, an 18-year veteran known as Gabby, had overflown more than 1,000 planets in his career, but had only set foot on 3. This mission began like all the others. Then, without warning, the ship began to shake violently. "Something's wrong with the engines!" one of the crew members shouted. In the next moment, the air was ripped from his lungs in a frosty plume. And silence reigned. Vol Noor, Yavathan primate of the battlecruiser Purity, watched approvingly as a fierce salvo of high-energy laser pulses blindsided the intruding vessel.
Send out the salvos. Make certain they maintain hygienic protocols on all material recovery.
Then Vol Noor locked himself in the communications booth to transmit what would be the only alert concerning the destruction of the Astrolabe, a short burst of code aimed at the Viceroy's flagship Aramadia, ground moored at Imperial City's Eastport. "3 days in a row now," Princess Leia said to those gathered in the staff conference room. "Does anyone have any hint why Nilspar has been canceling our sessions?" Intelligence Director General Carlis Rican turned to her.
"I have some information given to me just before I left the office to come over here. The Viceroy received visitors today on board the Aramadia."
"What?" exclaimed First Administrator Nanayod Ing. "They haven't allowed anyone but their own past the portal since they arrived. Who was it?"
"Senator Paramus, Senator Hodigiti, and Senator Marouk. They arrived together and stayed more than 2 hours."
Admiral Akbar stood up.
"Let's get them in here and we'll get some answers."
"Easy, my friend," Leia cautioned. "The Viceroy has every right to meet with whomever he chooses. He doesn't need our permission to hold a tea party."
"Princess," Rican said, "forgive me. If you were not ready to hear the answers, why did you ask the question?"
Leia turned to him and frowned. "What are you talking about?"
"You asked if anyone had any notion why the Viceroy was canceling his sessions with you. Now you learn that he's met privately with some of the Senate's most iconoclastic members. He's not only broken all precedent, but pointedly extended courtesies to others that he's never extended to you. And you refuse to draw the obvious conclusion."
"Which is?"
"That your negotiations with Nilspar are over."
"I can't believe he would throw all our work away without so much as a word."
The room was flooded with light. Out the transparisteel, they could see the spherical shape of Aramadia slowly ascending from the spaceport, with its 3 tiny escorts circling it like planets around a star.
"I guess we'll have to believe it now," said Eng.
Aramadia went into orbit 40 clicks below the lower limit of Coruscant's planetary shield. There it remained for the next 2 hours, as mute and inscrutable as ever.
At the rostrum of the Senate chamber, Chairman Van Kilnum gaveled the body into order. Senator Paramus rose and was recognized.
"Most of you know by now that the Yavathan consular ship Aramadia made an unscheduled liftoff from Eastport this morning. I have been informed that 3 port employees are dead and more than a score injured."
Then Kilnam reached out and dragged an aide closer by means of a fistful of fabric.
"Call the princess. Tell her she'd better get herself down here now and bring her fire suit."
Senator Paramus continued.
So far, there's been no information forthcoming from the president's office about these events. The princess has been unavailable, and there's been only silence from her staff.
Senator Tolik-Yar shot to his feet.
A point of privilege is not a license to slander and defame, sir.
Paramus shot Tolik a look of contempt.
Sit down and listen, Senator. Chairman, I ask that the Senate recorder activate the chamber's display screens and set them to channel 81, the diplomatic frequency.
For what purpose, Senator?
For the purpose of allowing Viceroy Nil Spar of the Avatha to address this body from aboard Aramedia, which is presently orbiting Coruscant.
Then Kilnam pounded his gavel.
Senator Paramus, this is most irregular. Do you accept responsibility for your speaker's remarks as though they were your own, including any and all sanctions that would fall on any member of this body for transgressions against the Senate's code of conduct? I do.
Then proceed with your presentation.
When Ben Kilnam's warning reached Princess Leia in her office, she was headed not for the door, but for the darkened display on which she was able to monitor the Senate's hypercom feed on Channel 11. I'm not rushing down there to put out a fire until I know what's burning, she told Akbar, who sat with her. Moments later, they were joined by First Administrator Eng, who had been routinely monitoring the Senate on his own, and came running, outraged, to alert Leia.
Did you hear, Paramus? No information forthcoming.
Oh, bless Tolik-Yar, anyway.
Paramus hasn't even called here. He didn't try to get our side of it.
Shh, Leia said. I can't hear what he's saying. They did not have to watch long before Leia concluded there was little she could accomplish by going to the chamber. They know me, she said. They know Senator Paramus. Let him make whatever intimations he wants. The Senate won't rush to judgment. I'll get my turn to be heard. But not today, in a shouting match. His long fingers steepled, Hiram Drayson leaned back in his chair and watched as the face of Nil Spar appeared on the Senate monitor.
Before I begin, I want to share my deep regret over the unfortunate casualties resulting from our ascent from Eastport. It was with great sorrow that I learned our warnings had not been honored, and the thrust radius of the Aramedia had not been cleared. We had no intention of injuring anyone. We left Eastport to avoid a confrontation, not to cause one.
Ah, very good, Drayson said to himself. Well done.
I regret the casualties, but I cannot take responsibility for them. For more than 3 days, we requested clearance to leave Coruscant. 3 members of your Senate witnessed 2 such attempts and can testify that we received only silence in reply.
Stars on fire,
First Administrator Eng breathed as everyone in Leia's quarters watched the proceedings.
Is it possible that any of this is true? Could there have been some sort of misunderstanding and we didn't hear them asking for clearance?
Shut up, Leia said.
It became clear that the government of Leia Organa intended to hold us here against our will. We could not wait any longer. I would have trouble believing this if there were not other evidence of her bad faith.
The screen flickered, and Nil Spar's face was replaced by images of burned and twisted metal laid out on bronze decking.
What you see now is the wreckage of a New Republic spy ship which violated the territorial hegemony of the Duskan League 4 days ago. It self-destructed when spotted by a local patrol vessel, but we were able to recover enough of it to identify its purpose and origin.
At that moment, Leia and her advisors, the audience in the Senate, in offices all over Imperial City, and on worlds throughout the New Republic, saw Yavathan hands turn over a large fragment to reveal a recognizable portion of the New Republic seal, the blue crest, the ring of stars, and the gold circle. Drayson leaned forward, staring, then slowly rose to his feet.
Bloody bilge! That's no prowler. That's a flatfish, or used to be.
He stabbed at his datapad with a finger. Verify.
Verify, Drayson, Hiram.
Call,
Kyle's Latoth. Scramble.
Calling Kyle's Latoth. Waiting. Verifying. Ready.
Kyle's, this is Drayson. Is that one of your ships being splashed all over the grids by the Yvathan ambassador? The associate director's voice was shaky.
Yes, we think so. It could be the Astrolabe. She's 4 hours overdue from her logout from Dornick 1142.
4 hours? The Viceroy said this happened 4 days ago. How is it you didn't know you'd lost a bird?
Admiral, you know there's not usually much traffic while they're in system. Look, what he's saying, it's not true. Astrolabe wasn't on a spy mission. This was routine survey work.
I didn't ask, but others will. Better work on your answers. Princess Leia's face went white when 3 oblong red body bags appeared on the monitor.
I regret to report that there were no survivors. We were able to recover 3 bodies, which we are prepared to make arrangements to return. But we cannot and will not negotiate this or any other matter with President Princess Leia Organa Solo. Everything she has said to us has been revealed by her actions as a lie. At this very moment, I, my staff, and my crew are imprisoned within the planetary shield of Coruscant.
Leia shook her head in disbelief. He's misinterpreted everything. How could this have happened?
Leia, we must do something,
Aang pleaded.
She nodded, and it seemed a great effort.
Contact General Baintoff. Have him open the shield. Tell the Aramadia to go. Ask Ben Kilnam to appoint a representative of the Senate to arrange retrieval of the bodies. Admiral Akbar?
The Calamari, who had been staring out the transparisteel, turned back to find the princess standing near the door.
Yes, Leia.
Why was one of our ships anywhere near Konakt? Did you know anything about this?
I do not have any answers,
Akbar said uncomfortably. Try to find some for me. And Leia turned away.
Where are you going?
Leia looked back over her shoulder. Home. To think about resigning.
The Battle Operations Center of the fleet carrier Intrepid was deserted except for 2 generals carrying unhappy burdens. General Eitan Abbott carried the burden of knowing what he had done, while General Han Solo carried the burden of knowing what must come. For more than 2 hours, Abbott had been signaling Coruscant, attempting to speak directly with Princess Leia. Finally, the hypercom lit up and squawked a red line alert. When the holo display brightened to show Leia from the shoulders up, Han was startled by how pallid her face was, how dark and lifeless her eyes.
General Abbott, I understand from Admiral Akbar that you have some information for me.
Yes, Princess.
He sat tall in his chair.
I am the person responsible for the astrographic probes being sent into Farlax. Before the 5th sailed, I requested an updated survey of that sector, including Kurnak Cluster. I did this with the full knowledge that it was in violation of your orders.
There was hardly a flicker of reaction on Leia's face.
Thank you, General. You are relieved of command, effective immediately.
Her eyes sought Han.
General Solo.
Han stepped forward.
Yes, Leia.
I'm placing you in command in General Abbott's stead. Your orders are to bring the 5th Fleet back to Coruscant as soon as possible.
The holo display went dark. Abbott turned away from the hypercom and stood.
I'm sorry. You will need to recall the patrols before turning the formation.
Sure. Now forget the excuses and tell me why you did it.
When Abbott hesitated, Han said, That's an order.
Very well. I believed I had been denied the information I needed to do my job properly. Both parts of it, protecting my command and protecting the New Republic's interests. Princess Leia made a military decision for political reasons, and it left me in an untenable position. I attempted to make an end run around her objections by going outside of the fleet to the Astrographic Survey Institute. You already know the results.
I think I do. Do you?
What do you mean?
That flatfish was no spy ship.
No.
And it didn't blow itself up, did it?
No.
Then maybe it found what you were worried is out here.
Perhaps so. But it doesn't matter. The probe made no report, and there'll be no more probes sent into that area. Whatever secrets the Yveatha have, they'll keep.
Well, we know someone out there is unfriendly to the New Republic, right?
I'd say so.
Seems as though we'd better do something to cover our withdrawal, then. Does that seem reasonable to you?
You are in command of the fleet, General Solo.
So I am. Now show me which one of these buttons calls in your tactical staff.
The transfer between Aramadia and the 8-kilometer-long Star Destroyer Pride of Yveatha took place at a rendezvous point deep in the heart of the Kurnak Cluster, far from any prying eyes. Nil Spar and his staff were met by Dar Bile, who had been the Viceroy's loyal second since long before the Day of Retribution. Now Primate of Pride of Yveatha, he had directed the training of the other primates as each former Imperial warship had joined the growing Black Fleet.
Nil Spar spoke to him warmly.
Dar, lead me to the bridge. Is the fleet ready?
The fleet is well ready.
As he followed Dar Bile into the corridor, Nil Spar let his fingertips graze the bare necks of the officers who knelt as he passed them. The touch symbolized his acceptance of the offer of their lives and freed them to rise. As they reached the bridge, Dar Bile addressed the Proctor of Information.
Lefarth, what news do you have of the New Republic's Fifth Fleet?
Primate, our shadow reports the fleet has disappeared from Hatawa. Our contacts on Coruscant tell us that it has been recalled.
Nil Spar bowed his head and breathed relief.
I am vindicated. I wish to speak to all our vessels.
Turning quickly toward the Proctor of Communications, Dar Bile arranged the necessary connections and announced the Viceroy to the crews of the 25 warships secreted in twos and threes across the cluster.
Nil Spar began to speak.
Remember that we are the Blessed, born of the light of the All. All beauty belongs to us. It was not meant for the creatures that creep in from the darkness beyond. Today, we will remove them, as the steward of a granary must remove the vermin to keep the stocks pure. I direct you to commence your tasks. May each of us honor the name of the Yveatha today.
Wearing an approving look on his dirty, deep-lined face, Negus Negakus slammed the check hatch shut and threw the locking bolt home. The ore sheds were more than two-thirds full, and there was still a month to go before the gypsy freighter returned to New Brigia. Perhaps this time there would be enough profit over the cost of their supplies to clear the last of their passage debt. Negagus would never have dreamed that after 15 years working the chromite digs, the little colony would still owe a debt to the captain of the freighter that had brought them here. He had no sooner started across the common toward the processing dome when tall creatures in green and brown body armor began advancing through the village in a wide line, their weapons turning cottages into burned and broken shells. A child screaming pierced the din of the machinery, then ended with ominous abruptness. The Gekas was ignored or overlooked long enough to take half a dozen uncertain steps out into the common, long enough to realize in horror that some of the blackened objects littering the ground were bodies. Then he found his voice and cried out his rage, raised both fists in defiance, and started across the common toward the nearest soldier. A silver-barreled weapon turned his way, and Negakus fell in agony, his last breath full of fire. In a garden city on Jetepatan, a world gentled by patient hands, a woman awoke from a dream to a nightmare. A falling star became a starship. The starship a warship, and the warship a fountain of death raining on the face of the world.
The current ran wild with the thrashings of murdered souls, dark with the stain of blood. Wialu shook her daughter awake.
Rouse everyone at once. Hurry! Something terrible has begun.
Of the 13 alien settlements visited by the ships of the Black Fleet in the first hour of the Great Purge, Polnei was the largest and the only one to fight back. Alarms began to sound the moment the Yevathan scout fighters cleared the ionization boundary above the planet's clouds, calling technicians to rarely tended stations. Many others ran outside and looked up at the sky. Those whose eyes were sharp enough saw three tiny black ships circling just below the clouds. One was over the city called Nine South, a second over 11 North, and the third over the ghost city of 14 North, which was being cannibalized for its structures and equipment. Then fire poured down from the sky. A young technical student named Platmalar began running toward the airfield. By the time he settled in the cockpit of the Thai interceptor he had just started learning to fly and started the power-up sequence, two other would-be pilots had arrived. With a bump and a lurch, Malar's ship cleared the bay, bursting out into the bright, diffuse light of a Polnei midday. The tiny black ships were still circling high in the air, like carrion birds. Activating his targeting system, Malar was heartened to see that three more of the settlement's Thai interceptors were in the air. Selecting the nearest target and steering towards it, he squeezed both triggers of the quad cannon. No one was more surprised than Malar when the target stayed in his sights and then exploded in a yellow-white gout of flame. In the next moment, Malar was suddenly blinded by light pouring in through the viewports. The interceptor was shoved roughly sideways as though by a great hand and shuddered violently in the aftermath. For a long moment, he was certain his ship had been hit and he was about to die. But the moment stretched out and he did not die. The after-image of the flash began to fade from Malar's eyes, and his ship, still climbing, emerged intact. Immediately, the targeting system beeped urgently at him, and Malar squinted, first to read the display, then to peer out the viewport. What he saw nearly overwhelmed him with fear. Riding above him in orbit was the largest ship he had ever seen, a great triangular shape bristling with gun ports, and launching fighters from bays on either side. Pulling the interceptor over on its back, he dove away from the starship at all possible speed. The fight for Polnei did not last long. Platmalar's success against the Thai was the only victory of the day, and no one was more aware than he how meaningless it was. Because he was afraid to die, he fled to the far side of the planet, hiding in the clouds under the ionization shield the Empire had long ago created. Calmly, ruthlessly, efficiently, the Black Fleet drew a curtain of death across the Kurnacht cluster. One after another, the vermin settlements fell beneath it. Full sterilizations were carried out on the two worlds to be reclaimed for the Yevatha. Colonists meant for those planets were already outbound in new thrust ships faster than light itself. Others would soon follow. It was the realization of a great destiny. At the end of one long day of glory, the All again belonged to the Yevatha alone. Leia Organa Solo waited eagerly behind the gate for the fleet shuttle to land at Eastport 18. The moment the engines were cut, she brushed past the gate supervisor and ran out onto the landing pad. When the hatch hissed open and the boarding stairs unfolded, she was waiting at the bottom. Han was the first to appear on the top step, wearing his lopsided grin and carrying his flight bag over one shoulder. Taking the stairs in three long strides, he tossed the flight bag down and gathered Leia up in a hug so deep and warm that it almost drove away the icy chill that had invaded her spirit since the collapse of the Yevathan negotiations and her humiliation by Paramus and Nilspar. She hid her tears against his chest. "It's gonna be all right," Han murmured into her hair. "You should hear about some of the bad days I've had." Leia laughed despite herself and hugged him fiercely.
"Let's go home."
Can't think of one good reason not to. Han bent to pluck his flight bag from the ground.
Don't make too much of it, hon, but I kind of missed you.
23 hours out from Khomeini, Fatim Allah turned on the cockpit recorder of the Thai interceptor. His face was pale and slick with perspiration. He had fled Khomeini, eluded the Avatha, and left Konak cluster behind. But he could not escape the cold equations of time, energy, and distance. The ship's small oxygen reserve was gone. His rebreather could no longer cleanse the breaths he drew, and he suffered agonizing headaches. In 23 hours, not a single vessel of any size had been detected by the interceptor's targeting system. He knew he was going to die, and he was going to die alone. Rasping, he cleared his throat and began to speak.
My name is Plat Malak. I was born in the city of Three North, on the planet Polnei. Yesterday, the 40th day of Moffat, warships attacked Polnei without any warning, without any cause. The combat recorders of my ship contain evidence of this attack, of the destruction of my home. They murdered my people, thousands and thousands and thousands. Please, help us. Please, if any are still alive, try to save them. Whoever sees this, you must find these monsters and punish them.
At last, Malar sagged back into his seat, exhausted by the effort of speaking. He was unconscious, barely clinging to life, when the crew of the 5th Fleet Prowler 5P8 stumbled on his hurtling ship. Leia peered through the transparisteel of the Fleet Infirmary's intensive care unit at the pale-faced young man who had just been transferred from a medical cocoon to the Bacta tank. A Fleet doctor and two MD-7 medical droids hovered over the biomonitors. Beside her stood Han and Admiral Akbar, who had awakened them on Han's first morning back home and insisted they accompany him. "Who is he?" Leia asked.
"He is Granon by stock, Polnei by allegiance," Akbar said. "His name is Plat Malar. He's suffering from severe metabolic disruption due to breathing his own waste gases. He may not live. It appears he was trying to get a message out of Khornok cluster. Apparently the only way he could."
Leia's eyes flashed. "What message?"
"I will show you."
In the privacy of Admiral Akbar's offices at Fleet Headquarters, Han and Leia watched the holorecordings taken from Plat Malar's Thai interceptor. When it was over, Leia pushed back from the table without a word, turning her back on Han and the Admiral. Hugging herself, she stood before the galactic holomap that covered nearly one wall. She was still staring into it with haunted eyes when she began to speak.
"Did you orchestrate all this to humiliate me, Akbar?"
"No, Leia,"
Akbar protested, surprised.
"I do not understand."
Han stood.
"That makes two of us. What are you talking about, hon? This doesn't have anything to do with you."
She whirled around to face them.
"Doesn't it? Look at him. He's just sitting there, waiting for me to draw the same conclusion he has. If you wanted to convince me to resign, Admiral, you couldn't have picked any better way."
Han looked to Akbar for help. "I'm missing something here."
"Princess, you are wrong," said Akbar. "You could not be more wrong. You are the chief of state of the New Republic. We need your strength and dedication more now than we did yesterday to answer this challenge."
Akbar's praise left Leia untouched. "Whose ships were those?"
"Plat Malar got close enough to the first ship to interrogate it with his targeting system. It answered as the Imperial Star Destroyer Valorous. Valorous was one of the Black Sword ships."
"I know that. And if it was at Polnei, under Yvathan command, then you're looking at the biggest fool in the whole Republic. Isn't that why you brought me in here? Your subtle way of telling me I was wrong?"
Akbar shook his head.
"I thought that before you made your decision about giving up your work,
You needed to know that there's still more for us to do. Whoever sent those ships to Polnei is the enemy of the peace you've tried so hard to build.
Admiral Akbar's right, Han added. All this other stuff, who burned the toast, who borrowed whose shirt, who left the light on, none of that matters. What matters is, what are we going to do now?
What can I do? Polnei wasn't a member of the New Republic. They weren't even applicants.
Han shook his head.
You're talking about obligations. I'm talking about the right thing to do.
I'm sorry about Polnei. I truly am. But it's too late to help them. Besides, if I were to send forces anywhere near Kurnacht, I wouldn't have to resign. The Senate would hang me first and impeach me later.
As soon as the door closed behind her, Han shot Akbar a quizzical look.
I have just one question. Who was that person? And what have you done with Leia?
I will tell you what I can, said Akbar. But I am afraid some of the answers will have to come from her.
A stranger was sitting cross-legged in the street outside the family entrance when Leia arrived home in a borrowed fleet skimmer. He was dressed in a long saffron robe that spilled out around him in a circle. She recognized neither his profile nor his species, but after she had disembarked and sent the speeder heading back, curiosity got the better of her. She walked out to the fence and called to him.
You! Who are you?
Jobath, Counselor of the Fia, of Galantos.
His face brightened.
But I know you. You are Princess Leia, the warrior queen, who rallied the oppressed to rise up against the Emperor. You saved my people from slavery. It is an honor to meet you.
What are you doing out there?
I am waiting for you. Your metal servant said that you were not receiving visitors, but my need is urgent. Princess, I've come about what's happening in the multitude.
The multitude? What's that?
The great multitude of the Circle of the Heavens. There is another name, an ugly name.
Are you talking about Kurnacht?
Yes, Kurnacht.
Jobath clasped the fence with long-fingered hands.
I've come to ask the protection of the New Republic and the great Princess Leia for my planet and my people. I beseech you to accept a petition for membership and fortify us against these murderers.
Leia started to back away. I'll consider your petition. Go to the diplomatic hostel. I'll send word to you there.
Within an hour of Jobath's arrival at the diplomatic hostel, three other worlds with legations quartered there submitted emergency petitions for membership. All three, along with the Fia, received only silence in reply. Coruscant Global News Grid reported the rumor that Princess Leia had already resigned as president. Admiral Akbar. The man in the doorway wore casual civilian clothing, but he had the posture of a soldier in uniform.
Mr. Treslin, come in.
I'm not here to visit. Can you get me in to see Leia?
I'm afraid I cannot, said Akbar.
I have to talk to her.
Blinking slowly, Akbar sat back in his chair.
Do you know her husband?
Not professionally, but his loyalty to her is well known.
Akbar nodded thoughtfully.
He was here with me for 3 hours today. He was the one who ordered the prowlers to Kurnacht, not General Abbott.
Interesting.
There is more. He brought the Fifth Fleet back, as she ordered, but only as far as the outer marshalling point, and he kept it at combat readiness with full crews aboard. He understands the stakes. He may be more sympathetic than you expect, but I cannot promise that she will even listen to him.
Thank you, Admiral. If you'll excuse me.
Akbar held up a hand to detain him.
Admiral!
Yes?
I was wondering, could the Viceroy have done this to Leia? We know so little about the Yavetha. Is it possible that something happened in that room? That he has done something to her mind?
No. No, I can tell you that nothing happened in that room.
The answer did not seem to please Akbar. The sounds of splashing and childish laughter covered the crunch of footsteps on the walk, but Leia, with her wariness magnified by feelings of isolation, was aware of Admiral Drayson's approach before he had even emerged from the trees. Jaina quickly sensed her mother's dark mood.
Mommy, who's that? Do you want me to make him go away?
No. No, Leia said with a quick smile, and tousled her daughter's wet hair.
Jason? Jaina? Take Anakin inside.
Drayson stopped a polite distance away, hands laced together behind his back.
Princess?
You know, if security is supposed to keep unwanted people out, the security around the presidential residence leaves a great deal to be desired.
Your husband admitted me, Princess Leia.
Did he? Well, my husband leaves a bit to be desired himself lately. What do you want?
5 minutes.
Drayson brought his right hand forward and showed her the data card he had cradled in his palm.
I think this will be useful to you in regard to the decision you are facing.
The data card contained a brief recording, time-stamped less than 2 hours earlier. It showed a pair of Yvathan thrust ships unloading on a hilly, brush-covered plateau, the kind and volume of material being unloaded, and the shape and size of the clearing being made for it dictated one conclusion. It was the first phase of a colonization landing.
Where is this?
The astrographic office knows it as Dornick 319. It's part of a system inside the Cornut Cluster. The Kubas, who lived there till yesterday, called it Morning's Bell.
What happened yesterday?
The same thing that happened to Polnei. It doesn't stop there. The evidence I've seen suggests that every non-Yervathan settlement in Kurnacht received the same sort of treatment.
What evidence? Where did you get this recording?
I'd rather you not ask me that, Princess.
Leia stared at him.
Who are you, really?
I do what I do under the authority of an executive order issued by Mon Mothma. You'll find it in your personal library files as D9020616.
Mon Mothma? She never said a word about this.
She found the machinery of the New Republic inadequate when it came to certain aspects of statecraft. I tried to address those shortcomings.
After he left, Leia watched the recording a second time and then a third. Then she dug her comlink out of the drawer and selected a familiar channel.
Han, you can stop hiding from me now. Please, come talk to me.
Murderous,
Han muttered as he watched the recording from Dornick 319. He shook his head disbelievingly.
I've been around long enough to see some cold moves, Paul. But killing a family one day and moving into their house the next is right up there with anything our old buddy Palpatine ever thought up.
Leia propped her chin on folded hands.
I'm afraid it makes perfect sense. So much of what he said sounds different to me now, almost as though he'd lied to me with the truth. What we want more than anything is to be left alone.
I remember that clearly from the first time we met. He mentioned how strange it was to see so many different species here. He told me the Yvatha didn't need our protection.
No, said Han. It was the Kubas who needed protection.
He as much as told me that, too. He said it was his mission to protect his people.
And he did. He kept them inside that ship, safely away from us. He controlled his own exposure to us, as though he were afraid of contamination. All I can do now is make sure Nil Spar stays on his side of the moat. Protect the settlements that haven't been torched. She looked up at Han. I'm going to have to send the Fifth Fleet back to Farlax.
I thought that might happen. I left the fleet at readiness high. No shore leaves, no major maintenance. They should be able to sail on a half hour's notice.
She touched his hand. I'm sorry, I know you don't want this.
Hold on just a moment.
Han pulled back from her.
I'm not going anywhere.
I can't change commanders on them again. Not twice in a week. Not under these circumstances. You've been out there with them for 2 months now. That gives some continuity, at least.
Right idea, wrong man.
If it were me, the first thing I'd do is hand the fifth back to General Abbott.
How can I do that? He was disloyal to me.
Was he? He disobeyed an order you never should have given. And if that's your reason, you're going to have to disqualify me, too. That prowler that picked up Plattmalar. What do you think it was doing out there?
She realized she had never asked herself that question. I assumed it was Admiral Drayson's handiwork.
Well, you weren't paying close enough attention. That's a Fifth Fleet prowler. I sent it there.
You? Leia's eyes flashed anger. I don't understand. Is it because I'm a woman? Is that why everyone seems to treat my orders like suggestions?
Oh, geez, no, Leia. I keep telling you, the uniform doesn't fit me very well. I'm just as bad at following orders from men, you know that. Look, I was there, you weren't. I did it on a hunch.
But how can I ask General Abbott to come back? I humiliated him in front of his crew, his command.
If you think what you did changed how they felt about him, you've forgotten the rules of the game. What you did changed how they felt about you. Give them back their commander. You might even win back a couple of points.
Though he could have had one of the suites held for senior officers and guests if he had wanted it, General Abbott was billeted in a double in one of the enlisted dormitories. And though he had more than enough right to have it closed, the door to his room was standing open, respecting a tradition that redrew the boundaries of privacy from the first day of training. Abbott himself was on the floor, going through a strenuous series of body lifts without so much as a grunt. General? Leia said. May I come in? The Dornian officer came to his feet smoothly and saluted smartly.
Princess, I am surprised to see you.
Leia pulled a straight-backed chair out from under the desk and sat down. General, a little while ago I decided that the hardest thing for me to do right now would be to stay where I am. And so that is what I'm going to do. And it's going to be hard enough that I need your help.
The loyalty of small men can be bought cheaply, because greed has no pride. Within minutes of General Etan Abbott's return to the Fifth Fleet, the Armada jumped into hyperspace, heading for Farlax and Kornak Cluster. Within minutes of that event, the Lisaboth Urn, Extraordinary Council of the Pakwapori, had reported it to Viceroy Neil Spahr by hyperspace comms. Then Kilnam, Admiral Akbar, Admiral Drayson, Leia, and Han were painstakingly crafting an announcement about the Yavathan massacres and a strategy to follow its release in the morning. They had just broken a deadlock over how to handle Plattmalar's involvement. Leia was determined not to exploit him and carried the argument. When all four data pads on the table began to chirp warning signals, Leia silenced her alarm.
Channel One? Did any of you...
No, said Akbar.
Absolutely not, said Ben Kilnam.
Then who? Asked Drayson.
I got a bad feeling about this, Han said darkly. The hollow monitor on the end wall came on by itself for a Channel One dispatch. It showed an image of Nil Spahr, who soon began to speak.
Citizens of the New Republic, I beg your indulgence for this intrusion, and I apologize for the unhappy news I must bring you. I am the Viceroy of the Duskan League, a free federation of Yavetha worlds in what you call the Kornak Cluster. I have come to you to tell you of events far from your home worlds, and to warn you of a danger very close at hand. 2 days ago, the forces of the Yavathan Protectorate successfully thwarted a deadly plot against our people and our way of life. The plot involved inhabitants of 3 planets.
3? Said Ben Kilnam. They can't count or tell the truth.
Located near the boundaries of our territory. These outsiders, whom we had generously allowed to settle on Yavathan soil, betrayed our trust and hospitality. All were discovered to be secretly assisting our enemies to prepare for an invasion. We acted swiftly and forcefully in our defense. All those responsible have been executed for their crimes.
Great stars, said Akbar. He's claiming credit for the massacres.
But you, the homeworlds, remain in danger. Because the plot against us was hatched on Coruscant by a new generation of warlords. I accuse President Princess Leia Organa Solo of high crimes against her office and against my people. If you do not renounce her, and you will not restrain her, then be prepared for war.
We hope you've enjoyed this production of Before the Storm by Michael P. Cuby McDowell. It was read by Anthony Heald. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Trevi Johnson. Before the Storm is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1996, all rights reserved. The book, Star Wars, Before the Storm, Book 1 of the Black Fleet Crisis, is available wherever Bantam books are sold.